Welcome to Lavender and Long Branch, a psych podcast. My name is Lavender.
And I'm Long Branch.
And this episode is 105, Nine Lives.
Man, it should have been 109, Nine Lives. That would have been nice.
That's very true. That was poor foresight on their part. So in this episode, Sean enlists the help of a cat to solve a string of suicides, which he believes are murders.
A little boy cat.
A little boy cat, which Gus gets jealous of.
Of course.
Because Gus. Yeah, I suppose a fair summary of this episode would be Gus is replaced temporarily by a little boy cat. Yeah. So the show opens with a flashback scene to Sean's getting to the bottom of a box of Fruity Puffs and realizing that there's no toy awaiting for him at the bottom. And Henry instructs him to just flip the next box up on its head to get to the toy immediately. He says he can just sometimes figure things out. It's not that hard. Turn them upside down. Everything is solved.
I don't know why that wouldn't have occurred to him to do in the first place.
Well, I would usually write to the company because then they'd send you out like six more boxes of Fruity Puffs.
But the toy, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, why wouldn't you just open it?
The toy's not going to be inside the plastic with the cereal. The toy's going to be in their major box. Mm. So I would just pull out the cereal and go straight for the toy.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my strategy. But did you notice the year?
I didn't. You are very good for you.
It's 1985 again. The last episode was 1989 and it had the same little Sean. And now we've gone back to 85. So I guess they're trying to, like, just pretend that he's older in later years.
Yeah. Equally bad at it, de-aging Henry as they are at aging and unaging Sean.
His, like, weird little toupee wig.
I love that that's in the opening credits as well, that's the shot they picked of Corbin Burnson was him in his toupee. Yeah.
Maybe he requested.
That's what I like to think.
Shot with hair.
I really like to think that he was so taken with the toupee, he insisted upon them using it for his credit sequence. But my point about the Fruity Puffs is, though, I think it's a continuation of last week. Last week, Henry gets shown up at 4 a.m. in the morning. This week, he's feeding him Fruity Puffs. Henry is an abusive parent.
It sounds like he's a good parent giving him Fruity Puffs. I would enjoy that.
That's not that is a bowl of cavities, Tori. Yeah. Oh, damn it.
I was never allowed sugary cereal. That's why it sounds exactly. good to me.
I was strangely enough fed Nutri-Grain, which we now know to be worse than anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I always had toast. I was a toast child.
Yeah.
I didn't like cereal that much.
No, because like...
Oh, I had Weet-Bix sometimes.
Sometimes. If I covered them with sugar, I would have Weet-Bix, but like cold milk in the morning is disgusting. I love a warm breakfast.
I would eat dry Weet-Bix. Have you had dry Weet-Bix?
Oh, God.
It's hard to eat, but it's fun. Like, they still taste good.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder...
But it all gets stuck in your mouth because it's so dry.
Well, yeah, sometimes I wonder what it'd be like to be stuck in the Sahara Desert and then I just eat a raw Weet-Bix. Yeah, and it sucks up all the moisture in my body.
I'd be like, that's a snack. I'll just eat like a raw Weet-Bix.
You get like two bites and you're just like, whoa.
You got to use your saliva to soften it.
That's it. If you ever have, like, I'm like, I don't know if there is a condition out there where you have excess saliva, but we have the cure. It's dry Weet-Bix.
But that's the thing with Weet-Bix, though, is like soggy Weet-Bix is disgusting. It's like getting that balance that's difficult.
Dry Weet-Bix is like shredded cardboard. I'm sure it's shredded cardboard.
No, it's fine. It's just a challenge. You just got to use your saliva. Really get in there.
Yeah, I used to make myself a nice healthy breakfast of Weet-Bix and then I'd get the sugar bowl and then just heaping
the sugar.
Yeah. And then the favorite part was when I finished with the Weet-Bix and then I get to the milk and there was all this like sugar granules at the bottom and
sugar milk.
I think now that would induce vomiting. I think I would chunder upon like sugar milk.
Sugar milk.
The things I used to eat as a child. And really early on in this episode as well, I'm sure Sean refers to like, this is a nickname. Don't be a silly goose.
A silly goose? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he says, don't be a silly goose. When they're, after the flashback, the show, then we sort of flash forward to present day Sean and Gus, and they're walking towards a crime scene, and Gus is saying how burnt out he feels, and how he really wishes they could take a break, and I don't know what he says, but Sean says, don't be a silly goose.
Don't be a silly goose.
Don't be a silly goose.
Well, did you notice in that scene, that Sean is wearing green and Gus is wearing yellow. Pineapple colours.
I didn't notice that. I did notice that Sean has a police scanner in the back of his pocket that only he seems to be able to hear.
Yes, that happens like twice in the episode. Twice. Later, he's like, oh, I've heard this.
How do you explain this second murder? Yeah. Suicide.
I mean, Gus would have heard that. Bloody. He's got like keen senses.
Everyone should have heard that if it's a radio. Yeah. Everyone should have heard that.
But you notice that little Sean wears the same kind of shirts as grown Sean? It was like a polo. It was like a striped polo.
I didn't notice that.
I was looking at the outfits.
You're very good at the outfits and the year. We all have our specialties in life.
And mine are outfits.
And
not particularly
years.
Useful.
Mm. I love the use of wide shots in this as a sight gag in this episode, because Sean and Gus are sneaking up to what is a suspected suicide. And they sneak into the crime scene. You can see Lassie giving everyone orders. And in the background, you can see Sean and Gus, like, sneaking through and, like, standing by a piano and acting natural. And then, like, hiding behind other police officers. I thought it was a really clever use of a wide shot of, like, having Lassie in center frame. But then you can see quite clearly in the background Sean and Gus being complete idiots.
I love those kind of shots where, like, half the joke is in the background.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I loved Buzz calling Gus Matt.
Yeah. It's like, oh, Matt, right?
Where he would get Matt from Gus, I have no idea.
But I like as well that starts with Gus's resentment towards Buzz as well. Like, and then it just pays off immediately with Buzz calling him Matt. And in this episode, I think we get a lot of, this is a pretty Lassie-heavy episode, I think. Starting with the revelation that Lassie takes three creams and four sugars in his coffee.
That would taste disgusting.
It would taste absolutely foul. But when he sees Sean and Gus in the crime scene, he's like, what in the name of sweet justice? I love that that's his sort of his profanity moment.
Yeah,
but
sweet justice.
Yeah. Lassie dealing with that cat throughout the episode is pretty gold. I think there are a lot of great, like, Lassie-Sean cat moments in this episode.
I wrote down that I love Sean grabbing Lassie's leg during the vision, his vision, but I don't remember that scene anymore.
Me either.
Apparently he grabbed Lassie's leg because I wrote it down.
Oh.
Oh, yes, that's right. He's, like, on the ground. This is in the first.
Is this the dazzling
murder.
Stretch?
No. It's in the first murder with the cat and stuff. And he's on the ground looking at stuff. And he's on the ground and Lassiter is standing. And he picks up Lassiter's leg and, like, holds it.
Oh, man.
But, so, like, there was that moment where the cat is licking itself, right? Mm. They cut to the cat. How did they prompt that cat to lick itself?
I had a brief thought about that.
Because they can't just sit around waiting for it to lick itself. Like, it might not want to lick itself. They've obviously had to, like, someone has had to apply something to its groin, or it's had to be trained to lick itself.
No, it would have applied something to its groin, but I was just thinking then that it's framed in a close-up, so someone could have theoretically, like, a B unit could have waited around for that cat to lick itself, but I think what they did was just, like, probably put peanut butter on its butt.
Now lick your butt.
And is this the orange cat that Sean was referring to a few episodes ago? I'm sure he makes reference to a cat in an earlier episode.
Do you mean the Gus's make-believe cat?
Yeah, sorry, that's the one. Gus's make-believe
Pickles?
Cat. Mrs. Pickles, who's an orange cat.
Oh, really? I didn't remember the colour.
Yeah, Mrs. Pickles is an
but
orange
cat. But I guess this
cabin.
Cat doesn't really count as an orange cat, because only orangey, right? It wasn't like a totally
It wasn't totally orange cat. It would have been great if they picked it up and, like, started using it as Mrs. Pickles, I think.
Yeah.
Oversight!
Opportunity missed.
Exactly. Well, that's another thing I'm going to add into my letter to Steve Frank, so there. Excuse me, Mr. Frank.
Where's the cat?
You make reference to Mr. Pickles. But I faith her.
Okay.
I love him. There's a great, We're going to do a proper podcast now. In a great reference to the year that it being 2006, Gus says he threatens Sean. He says, I'm going to buy a disposable camera and take pictures of Sean taking care of the cat. He's going to buy a disposable camera for when Sean actually has to pick up after the cat.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. That's obviously funny. In this day and age, we'd all use our iPhone.
Yeah. It was a different time.
It was such a different time.
Speaking of different times, the second victim with the white jacket in the back seat, I definitely had a white jacket just like that.
In 2006?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
A white blazer you used to wear.
Yeah, I used to wear a white blazer. when I was 17 years old. I was a nerd.
You were such a nerd.
It's also because Lorelai had one in Gilmore Girls. She had a white face like that, and I was like, that's the coolest thing ever. Except hers had orange piping, which was really cool. But mine was just plain white.
Yikes.
Yeah. I think I wore, like, double-layered tank tops underneath. Do you remember people used to wear those double-layered tank tops?
I do.
Like a white one and then a coloured one over the top. Yeah.
God, I thought they were so cool.
Swish.
You could walk into any store and just kind of, like, have the whole rack. My bell-bottom jeans. Yes.
My bootcut jeans, my double-layered tank top, and my white blazer.
Mm-hmm. Beaded necklace.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had a chunky necklace in on as well. So stylish.
Chunky necklace, double tank top, bell button. Oh, I can't do the rap.
What were you trying to rap?
I was trying to freestyle rap about fashion.
But to a certain thing? Or
no, it was my own beat. It's a beat from my heart. Did you know that Shia LaBeouf is live streaming his heartbeat at the moment?
Yeah, I saw that. Why?
I fell asleep to it last night. I put it on.
Oh my god, is there?
I woke up 3 times throughout the night.
That is the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, no.
Loneliness has a face, and it's Alice listening to Shia LaBeouf's heartbeat when she goes to sleep.
I honestly didn't put it on because I didn't want to feel lonely. And I thought listening to Shia LaBeouf's heartbeat would make me feel not so alone.
No.
This actually kept me up. Because there was someone's heartbeat in the room.
Did it make you think about Transformers?
Well, made me think, yeah, it was quite even Stevens.
I wonder if it was really his heartbeat or if it was just like a recording of like 2 minutes of his heartbeat played on repeat. Did it ever change?
It did, yeah. That's what sort of woke me up sometimes is because it sort of beat.
I'm going for a run.
No. Well, he was asleep, I think, for most of it. Because, like, when I put it on at night, it was, like, 6 in the morning in America, and so he was still sleeping.
Oh, but he would have woken up at some stage.
At some stage, he would have woken up.
During the night, and it woke you up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Me and Shia are synced up.
Just the power that's being wasted. No. Leaving it on all night.
Well,
Think of the climate.
Think of those moments when I woke up because his heartbeat changed, and think about how connected I am to Shia LaBeouf right now.
Why would you want to be connected?
Because we're not famous anymore.
And scene. Back to the show. Back to Psych.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the cat being in the front seat and Gus sitting in the back seat with his knees up really high for some reason.
He gets car sick.
It's like he put his feet up on something and they were like, his knees are like right up near his. Did I see knees? Yeah, his knees were right up near his ears and stuff.
I'm sure they're in a two-door Echo, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's the older version of my car, which is why I bought my car.
Theoretically, that could be quite true, that he's right up.
Yeah, it's pretty. It can be close quarters in the back there.
Yeah. I love that Sean immediately, when they get to the second crime scene where the woman's been asphyxiated in her car or, poisoned in her car, that Sean immediately puts the cat in the back seat and then it just pees on everything.
And it pees on the white jacket.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so fun how Sean antagonizes Lassie to the point where Lassie, like, actually directly addresses the cat. And Sean says nothing. He just, like, I think, like, Sean's walking away with Gus.
Mm.
And Lassie goes, he's like, did the cat think of that? But, like, Sean and Gus are already by the car and he just sort of yells it across the crime scene and just Sean says nothing and just lets it hang there.
Yeah.
I love that so much. He was able to get that rise out of Lassie, too. Yeah. I thought that was so, freaking awesome.
It was good.
Poor Lassie.
Poor Lassie. Speaking of poor Lassie, what's more, poor Buzz.
Yeah.
Was Buzz asking Lassie for wedding night sex tips? Could not be more awkward or inappropriate. For the workplace.
Exactly. Stepping into his office to ask him about the added pressure to perform.
It's like, don't you have friends, Buzz? Don't you have people to ask that aren't like...
Yeah.
Lassiter of all people?
I wrote literally the most awkward. And I also made a note of how, like, glorious it was of poor Lassie pretending that he had an office. Of, like, letting Buzz knock at the thing and then he's just like, oh, come on in. And again, they use the feet. They, like, do a close-up of Buzz's feet as he sort of steps into Lassie's area.
Lassie's zone.
Yeah.
And that leads into one of my favourite things of all time, the Dazzle and Stretch psychic vision. Dazzle and Stretch. And I loved how the backing, like the music, yeah, really fit in with the whole Dazzle and Stretch song. Yeah,
the full show tune.
Yeah, and a stretch.
It made me think it needs its own, like, you know how in Monsters, Inc. 2,
put that thing my girl came from, also help me.
Also help me.
And cut.
Yes. Yeah. Where they actually give us the full number.
Yeah, thing.
I want that payoff.
What was that? The second song is like, he's out of our hair. I love that movie. It's so good. No, but I love it. And then at the end of the Dazzle and Stretch, he ends it on Lassie's lap. Yes. Hello, sexual attention.
And when I get that feeling,
I want some Lassie's healing. Oh, Lassie's.
Lassie's pee-pee.
Yeah, but they're really, like, laying it on in the last few episodes with Sean and Lassie, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really there.
They're playing into it.
They're really playing into it, they are, yeah.
It's like when I go back and rewatch episodes of, because I got really caught up in the intensity of, like, the brotherly bond in Supernatural, but then when you sort of go back, you realise that, like, there's just a lot of sexual tension. Like, what I sort of think is brotherly bond is, like, when they're giving each other, like, such intense looks and when they're fighting and it's so passionate, it's also quite, like, sexy.
Yep, that's why people write the incest fanfic.
And now I understand slash fiction. Learning. Oh, in that scene, though, Lassie's like, oh, all actresses are crazies. I did one in college. She had a nose ring. So many things wrong with that. All actresses are crazies. Spoken by an actor. Team Ombudsman.
But I love it when they do that on shows. Like, they take digs at actors or, like, TV or movies in general. Mm-hmm. I always like that in shows.
And also, she had a nose ring. Maybe what does that mean?
That's for Lassie. That means that she's, like, kind of hardcore. She's got, she's got a nose ring.
I want a nose ring. I kind of want another piercing.
No.
I know, because they're not
maybe
in fashion
anymore.
Maybe
a stud, but not a ring.
Yeah, that's true. I definitely wouldn't want a ring, because then it'd look like a tagged animal.
I'd just be worried about getting snot in it all the time.
Yeah.
Just getting boogers up in your nose hole.
I don't know. I chronically pick my nose anyway, so it's like, whatever.
So you can make one yourself. You can get one of those magnetic ones that kids wear. Or like a sticker. Get a sticker one.
Yeah.
Or you can just draw a little dot on your nose and look like a blackhead.
I have a bunch of leftover stickers from the time I used to wear a bindi. I'm kidding. I'm not that racist.
Okay, that's culturally insensitive.
Remember that time when I was just being super culturally insensitive and wore bindis everywhere?
Yeah. It's like people that have like, what's that theme that people use when they like to excuse to dress up as different nationalities, like around the world or, you know, that sort of thing. People have parties like that where it's like you come as a culture. Yes. It's like, that's just an excuse for you to wear a bindi.
And a bunch of jocks always like come in blackface.
Or like an offensive American, Native American headdress or something.
Oh my God. Yeah. When people go to like, those festivals and wear the Native American headdresses, the warrior dresses.
People would just know. Just ignorance abounds, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, anyway.
Yeah.
I loved, I say loved, but it was quite dated in the moment to have that numbers reference.
That, yes.
Sean's writing on the board and he's like, what are you doing? He's like, it works in, that's what they do in numbers.
I thought that was like, at the time, I thought that was such a sick burn. And now.
Yeah, because at the time, that's like when numbers was big, right?
Yeah.
Because numbers was 05 to 2010. I looked it up earlier. So it would have been like when numbers was really popular.
Because it's really like nothing more stupid than a completely clear whiteboard. Like, what's the point of it? What's the point of having a glass whiteboard?
It's so the camera can see through it. That's exactly. The only point.
So you can do cool little shots where you can see the actors' faces through the writing on the, through the numbers on the board. And
I never saw numbers. Did you ever watch it?
I did watch it because I really liked the actors in numbers.
David Cremotes.
No, I think I liked Oscar Isaac.
Is he the other one?
Yes.
And he is in Psych later on. He's a guest star.
Is he?
Yep.
Let me just find
he was also in
numbers.
A little favourite movie of mine from the 80s called Girls Just Want to Have Fun. He was in that movie with Sarah Jessica Parker and Helen Hunt, who were both like 18 years old. And he must have been about 16 or 17. He was like the goofy best friend of the hunky guy. Oh,
David Crumholtz. Yep, no, you're right. Sorry, it was him. I got confused with a different person.
Yeah, David Crumholtz from The Santa Claus.
Pretending to say about you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just know him from The Santa Claus.
Oh. No,
he's probably sad.
I know, yeah, and you're in from 10 Things I Hate About You because he's, like, the nerdy Shakespeare best friend who, like, woos the Shakespeare girl. He's just, like, oh, no, he's just, like, the nerdy best friend that woos the girl who's super into Shakespeare.
But, I mean, the other guy is a guest star in Psych later on. And he's the one that strong girls just want to have fun when he was a young teen. I love that movie. It's terrible, but it's great.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what else he's been in, but other things.
Plenty of other things, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of who's been in things.
Yeah.
Segue into the segment.
Yeah.
There was no one from X-Files, but the guy who played Stanley Tilden, which I think was the older murder victim,
mm-hmm.
was in an episode of Millennium, which was the X-Files
spin-off. Oh, is that what
it was? So I'm
going
to count that as a half point. We're like 4.5 out of 5 in terms of X-Files for the X-Files file.
Okay. Well, I'll play How Do I Know Him with 9 Lives. Scott Mitchell Clark, who plays Wes Hilden Batch, who's the apartment owner, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
He's the brother.
Yeah.
He is in Supernatural, in Free to Be You and Me. The guy who plays Terrence, Carlos Jacko.
Oh, he's been in heaps of stuff.
He has. He hasn't been in Supernatural, but he is in 4 different episodes of Psych.
Yeah, I saw that.
Different people.
And he was in The Comeback.
And Firefly.
A whole bunch of things.
Seeing him in The Comeback immediately made me think we should be doing a comeback podcast.
Why didn't we think of that?
I know, right?
That would have been amazing.
Sorry,
Saga.
No.
I'm going to stop this right now. No.
No, I know. It's just like... I was just thinking, because it's very difficult to do a podcast on a procedural show, because there's no sort of character development, whereas, like...
Yeah, that's true.
In The Comeback, we had such long discussions about The Comeback, because there's so much going on in every episode.
Well, it's too late
But once
now.
We get to the end of... Once we get to the end of Psych,
in several years?
Exactly. Much like Gilmore Guys have claimed, like, Bruce Boys is their next thing.
Yeah, it's going to take us, like, 2 years to do... No, like, a year.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 a week.
We'll see how we get.
Yeah.
But there's another one. Rory Durkins is in Supernatural in 2012. And I think he's the one who's the call center guy with the eyeliner. He's in an episode of Supernatural. And he's in an episode of Fringe, which is probably where you know him from.
Ah, there you go.
Exactly.
Yes, I remember him in Fringe.
Oh,
yes.
Really? Gosh, you're a good Fringer.
Yeah, Fringy. I've rewatched it many times. It's one of those shows that pays off with every rewatch.
Yeah.
You notice something new every time.
I couldn't, because...
It's excellent.
Because J.J. Abrams does those time jumps in every single one of his show. Like, I couldn't handle, like, the flash forward to the...
Well, that's the thing, is, like, it's at the time, it seemed so random to do that. And it seemed like it didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then on the rewatch, there was so much foreshadowing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is foreshadowed all the time.
Oh,
but at the time...
Yeah.
Like, at the time, you thought that that was foreshadowing something to do with the other side. Like, they talk about, like, an invasion...
Yeah.
And they talk about a war or stuff like that. And it was actually, like, that's what they were talking about. They're talking about the observers, not the people from the other side.
Oh.
So it's amazing. There's amazing foreshadowing. So you got to rewatch it and you'll just be like, oh, yes. It's perfect. It is pretty much one of the only perfect shows that I can pretty much find next to no faults in Fringe.
Yeah. No, that's very true.
Even in terms of plot holes and in terms of characters and stuff like that. Like, Olivia Dunham is, like, the best character in the entire world. She wore sensible shoes. She saved herself many, many, many times.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss it so much. It was so
good. Yeah, the way it let all the actors, like, stretch themselves, like, all the variety of roles they were playing was just absolutely incredible. So good.
It was so good. I'm so sad that it's over.
Sigh. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is she up to these days?
She was going to be in that terrible Ryan Murphy show. That got pre-cancelled.
Oh.
I forgot what it was called.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they cancelled Ryan Murphy shows.
Yeah, Ryan Murphy can suck it. I hate Ryan Murphy. But, yeah, it was one of his shows. It was like sort of like a looking sort of show, I think. I can't remember what it was about, like, not NYC Couples or something like that. It didn't sound very good.
Right,
it sounded
cliche.
I probably won't watch that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it got cancelled anyway.
Mm.
Or it didn't get picked up or something like that. So I was like, yes, like, thank God. Anna Torv can move on to something better.
Exactly. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Because, you know, she used to be in Secret Life of Us.
No.
Yeah, in like the, it's like the second gen of Secret Life of Us. You know, like the first half was all the originals.
Yeah.
And then the second half, was it Claudia Carvan that was in it? She left or something. Like some of the originals from the cast left and they got some new people in and she was one of the new people.
Wow.
In the last, I think it was the last two seasons.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And she had brown hair.
Well, yeah, because I think she does. But, yeah. Oh, she's such
and she was in McLeod's Daughters as well.
What? Oh my God, McLeod's Daughters.
Yes, I used to love McLeod's.
Jeez.
She played the original Jasmine, the cousin. Do you know how, like, later when all the real McLeod's Daughters leave, they bring in some cousins? She was the original cousin. She was Jasmine for, like, one episode. And then she left. And then a few years later, they brought in Jasmine, like, for and it was a completely different actress.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
What a little slice into Australian television history.
No, and she was in this one show, I think it was called The Lion's Den. Do you remember seeing promos for that show? It's like 2003, probably.
I like, the name rings a bell, that's it.
Yeah, she was in that and it was cancelled.
Oh, wow.
But I just remember seeing the promos for that show and being like, that doesn't look that great.
Yeah.
And it got cancelled.
Yeah.
That was a very long tangent. Sorry. Back to psych. What we talk? Oh, we're talking about how we knew people from things.
Exactly.
That's how we got onto it.
Yeah. Well, this is exactly like a real life IMDb suck hole. this is where like 4 hours of my life goes every night.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, they're from that. Oh, and that.
No. Oh, and that. That show. Oh, they're from that.
Like you're playing 6 degrees of everything.
Exactly.
So back onto psych.
Yeah.
The best thing ever, Gus's first nickname, Gus Silly Pants Jackson, his first official nickname introduction.
Yes.
That's Gus Silly Pants.
That's Gus Jackson, Silly
which
Pants.
Which is a nice one. And it's quite a simple one as well, considering how elaborate they get. He's still got Gus in there. He just put in, like, Silly Pants Jackson. That was the only, like, strange bit. Like, it still had a connection to Gus and not just something random, like, Nick Knack, my personal candy striper that he has later. Yeah. What are your thoughts? Are you
I wrote give this man an Emmy in regards to Dazzle and Stretch. That's like my big note. Of like Sean being the cat being the actress.
Yes.
And then Lassie calls it bad acting.
He's like he's channeling the cat who's channeling the whatever her name was.
Did you feel like there was a no-homo undercurrent to when Sean and Gus were at the apartment talking to the brother?
A little bit, but at the same time, not really because Sean was cool about it. Like,
he was pretty into it.
Yeah, like it wasn't overdone in a sense. Like Gus was sort of like, oh, come on. No.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, ew, gross. You know what I mean? Like he was just like, oh, why? Why are you doing this? Like why are you doing a whole other bit? Another one of Sean's bits, you know.
I'm sure there are extended sequences in 21 and 22 Jump Street that it just like Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill just being like, no homo, no homo.
That's so stupid. No, I thought it was
we're
pretty
partners,
good.
Not partners kind
of,
you know.
Yeah, because instead of that, like, that was just Sean jumping off from someone's assumption.
Yes, yeah.
And so it was sort of just felt like another one of his bits.
Mm.
And then later he's like, where's Cole? We got the apartment. That's nice.
Yeah, he's in his enthusiasm. Yeah. And obviously another one of Sean's attempts to ingratiate himself into the lives of suspects is when he hires out that little supply closet to be the dialer psychic.
I love that.
And he immediately hangs up a cat poster.
Yeah, hang in there.
Hang in there. And that joke honestly just sunk in today of just like, oh, hang in there, cat. Because it's a cat and the whole episode is about cats. It hadn't sunk in before then that they specifically hung up a hang in there poster with a picture of a cat.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That did not appear to me at all. Even right now, that took me a second to put that together.
Oh, dear.
But did you notice that, I'm not sure if this is the first time that it's happened, but it's the first time I noticed that as an audience, we notice the clues before Sean does.
Really?
Because, like, as in, like, they don't do that zoom in noticing the clues thing. Mm. It's just like when he's in the suicide hotline office, And he looks out the window and there's a guy on the phone pole, like with the phone lines.
Mm.
He just sees that. There's no zoom in on it, but you notice it. And then later when he's in the dialer psychic office / utility closet, there's the schedule for the phones and stuff. There's like a phone line maintenance schedule there. And later in the episode, that's what flashes back for him to notice. You know what I mean? Like when he's putting things together, it flashes back to those moments and then does the zoom in.
See, I...
Maybe it's because I remembered what happened. I noticed it the first time, but...
That's it, because I knew what was happening as well. I noted that when Sean walks in with a pineapple to introduce himself to the office, the reason the boss lets him do so is because he says the phone lines are down because they're just being worked on right now, and so it's all being placed. Is that lampshading? Is that what it's called? Well, I'm going to look up lampshading now and look up in...
There was a teacher we used to call the lampshade in high school because...
That sounds rude.
It was rude. It was because she wore fully floral outfits, but her body was the shape of a lampshade, which I realise now is horrible, but was funny because she did have very floral outfits and she did dress like a lampshade.
Lampshading is a word used for situations in television where the concerns, criticisms, and arguments of the audience are answered in the text itself. Okay.
I think that's a different thing.
It's a different thing.
Because I know that, like, I know that a red herring is when it's like a false
It's clue. A false, yeah, it's a false
I don't
clue.
Know what the term is for giving us regular cues. But yeah, that was the first time I really noticed it as something where you will put it together before Sean does, in that sense.
Mm.
Like, you see the clues before he does.
Oh, it's foreshadowing, isn't it? Is it?
Oh, it could be foreshadowing, yeah.
Hmm.
I generally think of foreshadowing as more like unrelated. Or, you know what I mean? Like
foreshadow wrong.
Something that's more about something that happens a lot later, not necessarily in the same episode. Mm. Or foreshadowing something is like that's unrelated.
Yeah, warning or indication of a future event.
Yeah. I can't really think of an example of what that would be. Like maybe...
Oh, it's just
someone,
no, it's,
like someone now, like an example of foreshadowing being someone narrowly misses getting hit by a car or something, and then they get hit by a car later or something. That's, I don't know. That's what I think of.
If I think it'd be someone like driving
like an unrelated event.
Yeah,
that's what I think of
someone driving the car and the brakes failing, and then like you cut to like a different scene and people are just like walking. When it be like someone cutting someone's, or like someone's cutting someone's brakes, or like saying like, you know, oh, my brakes are really being a little bit faulty, and then like nothing being said about it until like much
yeah,
later.
Yeah.
And then the brakes fail them.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It sounds like I'm just mentioning something in passing that doesn't seem important at the time.
Yeah, until it is important.
Well, I guess that does count then, doesn't it?
But it's not really a future
but
event.
Yeah,
it's
it doesn't really
like
count as foreshadowing. More as just like the clues for later.
The word is probably clue.
Yeah, it's probably the simplest one.
Yeah. I decided to do a bit of like a cat retrospective in popular culture and see where this cat fit into the cat spectrum. I wrote down some notable cats like Mr. Bigglesworth, Snowball the Second from The Simpsons, Garfield, Crookshanks, Milo and Milo and Otis, Lucifer from Cinderella, and then Salem from Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah. What about the evil cat in Cats and Dogs? That's played by Sharon Hayes. He plays the evil cat.
I saw that one, but then I didn't write it down because I didn't think you would have seen Cats and Dogs because it's a children's movie.
Yeah, but it came out when I was a child.
All right.
So I watched it when I was a child. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Because I hate cats and love dogs.
Ah, right.
And the movie The Cats Were Evil and the dogs were good. So I liked it.
I really liked Milo and Otis. That was one of my favourite movies.
Oh, me too.
As a kid. Yeah. Freaking gorgeous. It's a masterpiece.
So weren't those animals mistreated? That's the thing that has been like discovered in later years, that those animals were mistreated in Milo and Otis. So I was...
Oh, God.
Childhood destroyed?
Childhood destroyed.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that's a thing.
Shit. You know what I love,
like
though?
Skippy.
Yeah. Far out. Okay, well, back to the Lifeline office, though. I really liked how when Sean's having the psychic episode, when he's doing the psychic reading on the guy who's the poet with the eyeliner, how he does the psychic reading like it's a slam poem.
Oh, yeah.
I see, like, lyrics and songs, something, and he does it like it's a slam poem.
And on that same thing... later at the end when it's not at the end actually, it's just later when Lasseter is accusing that guy and he's like, let's listen to what you're, you know, to the music that you're listening to, and he pulls it down, it's like up and away. It's like a really cheery, like 60s, 70s sort of music. I enjoyed that a lot. I can't remember where it was now, but another Lassie thing I liked was how he was sitting out in front of the beach And Juliet's like, oh, I can see why you come out here. It's lovely. Like, the view is great. And he's like, oh, I never noticed before. It's like, of course he never noticed the view. Classic Lassie.
Mm.
And, sorry, to go back to Sean. Sean was wearing blue again, so I wrote Sean in blue. Love heart, because he looks really good in blue.
I saw Sean in blue and I thought, I wonder if Tori's made a note of that.
Yeah, you know it.
Mm.
Another thing that I enjoyed was when Sean got Gus to call up the hotline so he could, like, see what the guy's doing. And Gus was talking about, like, some hobbies when the guy... I can't remember how they got there exactly, but Gus said, like, I was thinking more something like coin collecting or something at the beach. I like water activities. Like, oh, Gus, coin collecting, something at the beach. It's so cute.
It gets really intense, I think, in terms of Gus laying out everything that's really sad about his life.
Hmm.
But it also ties immediately back into how much he needs Sean and how much he needs the detecting and the detective agency stuff.
Yeah.
There's sort of a palatable sense of, like, his life isn't really... You know, he's making money, which is great, but he's not really enjoying his life that much. And he just has one friend outside of work, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But he also, in this episode, I think really gets into the role play a lot as well. Like, he really does enjoy in the psychic office. Like, oh, you know, when Sean's having his big episode in Chief Vic's office, he's like, oh, he really gets into, like, narrating and breaking down what's going on while Sean's being a complete dick. He's not being aloof anymore. He's like...
He's sort of finding his role.
Exactly. He's finding his feet and everything. And so I think that's that beautiful, like, oh, yeah, no, Sean, like... Gus is really enjoying this and he needs it as much as Sean needs it. And there's more of an equality in their relationship rather than what it was before of Gus being dragged along, kicking and screaming.
Yeah, but they do still come back to that.
Definitely.
A lot as a convention. Because Gus still keeps his pharmaceutical sales job for a long time, right? He does,
yeah.
Like years, so. Mm. But his knowledge always comes in handy. Like, that's always part of it as well. Is that he'll have a knowledge of a drug that Sean won't know. Or he'll, you know, have some connection through his route like he did in Spelling Bee, like when he knew about the doctors and stuff. So, like, his side job, but his real job does come in handy and stuff, which is nice.
Mm. I like that because it's mostly a procedural show, we do get a lot of character development and a lot of it seems to be quite organic as well. I made a real note of how each episode so far you sort of built upon the foundations of the character and just added little things that feel really natural. So you start with, like, Lassie, who's this really gruff detective, and then you sort of add little things like his underlying insecurity about his position in the force, you know, where he's like, he doesn't have an office, he just has a little space he's carved out for himself, and how he doesn't really play... By the book, he likes to invent his own set of rules, but, like, he's clearly passionate about policing and everything as well, and it's just all these little things, but he's really, really proud too, and all these beautiful little things about that sort of, I guess, build on the caricature-y foundations that we started with and then become more organic and more fully fleshed characters rather than just, like, letting them be caricatures of themselves.
And I guess that's a luxury of the 21 episode season as well, is that they can take their time with that and not push it so hard, because sometimes, you know, with shorter orders now, they sort of have to push that thing a little bit more hard to begin with, whereas with the longer season they can take their time in developing stuff. And it's interesting, I can't remember if, like, how it ends up in later seasons, but I've noticed in a lot of shows, it's generally more in drama procedurals that I've noticed, like, the characters usually start more developed and then over time they become more caricatures of themselves.
That's generally, like, the sitcom regression.
Yeah, and I noticed that in, like, Bones. Yeah. That happened a lot in Bones, so I stopped watching Bones years ago, but you know what I mean, that sort of thing. And sometimes, like, I guess The Office, did they really do that? I don't know if The Office is a great example. But, yeah, like, shows were just relying on, like, what part of the story the character serves rather than developing the character that much.
Well, I think, it definitely happens in, I think, there's two sides of it. There's sort of the side you see in House where they'll introducing, like, House being pulled up on his drug addiction, but rather than, like, change the drug addiction or going on organically from there, like, the police officer would get killed or something, or, like, the detective agency would be, the detective would be discredited.
Yeah, so
like,
things keep sort of getting dragged.
So they can, sort of reset each season and go back to the way they were, like, rather than continuing anything. That's true. They'll sort of have, like, a false cliffhanger. And then they'll reset.
Yeah.
So they don't ever actually have to progress anything. Mm.
And I guess the antithesis of that, I suppose, would be Nurse Jackie.
Yes.
Because the shit hits the fan in every season of Nurse Jackie, but things never go back to how they were. Like, things always change. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I guess it would be more those procedural shows.
Yeah.
That do want to go back to the status quo because
they have an impetus to press reset.
Yes, because they still have to do their crime or their medical thing in every episode, and they've got a format that works. So to change too much from that format, like changing the characters too much, would be to change the show, and then it might not be.
Which I think what they wanted, you know? Yeah, which you're probably having this, like, you're having this realization now, which is the same as sitcoms because it's all about them being in situations, and so you can't have these characters leave a situation. So, again, you have to keep hitting the reset button.
Yeah.
And, like, because you can't develop the character, the only thing you can do is heighten their absurdities. And I think that's how you end up with these, like, grand caricatures where at the start you start with a really nuanced character and then by the end you just have this absurd piece of, like, ridiculous nonsense, I suppose.
And I think if you think about Parks and Rec.
Mm.
I think they, in some ways, they fell into that, but then in other ways, they really didn't either because they allowed the characters to progress beyond the Parks Department.
Mm.
Like, they allowed them to leave and to pursue other things. So, while in a sense they did all sort of would just fulfill the same sort of role, like Donna would always fulfill the same role, Tom would always fulfill the same role, and Ben as the nerd. Like, while they still had those stereotypes, they did move beyond that in terms of moving on in their lives and, having some other development, I guess.
But
more in the seventh season than in anything in their others, though.
Yeah. But if you think about The Office, though, you start with the character of Dwight, who's, like, a little bit eccentric in the start, but, like, nothing too severe. But then by the time he gets up to accepting the management role, he's really, like, he's just not a suitable candidate for manager at all. Like,
yeah,
you know, he immediately paints The Office black and brings a gun into work.
That's the thing. But then at the very end, sorry to spoil it for people who don't watch it, but then he becomes the manager for real and suddenly he's good at it. Like, I mean, it sort of makes sense in that he's learned his lesson.
Yeah.
But, considering how poorly he did in
the Office, the Office consists, like, constantly hit reset, though. Like, it would constantly hit reset on characters and, like, try to backpedal and...
And that's part of, like, I don't know, we were talking about Ryan Murphy. I can't remember if we were talking about this one or in the one before. It was this one.
Yeah.
We've gone on a lot of tangents in this episode. Ryan Murphy does that in every episode. Like, in Glee. And in Popular.
Yeah.
They would have these things, amazing things happen in episodes. There'd be a huge progression for someone and they'd, you know, conquer something or, you know, realize something about themselves. And then in the next episode, it'd be like it never happened.
They'd realize that they're happy being single. The next episode, they'd be complaining about they're lonely and they'd have a boyfriend by the end.
Exactly. Like, it would just be so infuriating that the developments only ever happen within one episode and then they just forget about everything that happened. And that's what drives me friggin' crazy about his writing.
And it led to the demise of Glee. Like, the ratings dropped off so significantly because it's just no stakes. Like, you're investing in these characters who are just, like, who just, you know, every time you get so on board with all these progressions they're having or it makes some really great social comment, it would just, he'd hit reset and go back or he'd do something really awful the next episode.
And I mean, it also had a problem because they were all graduating high school and then, like, what do you do?
some graduate and all replace the cast, et cetera, et
cetera. Yeah, exactly. Like, that was an unsustainable format anyway. Mm. But
he does the same thing with American Horror Story.
Yeah, and he did it in Popular as well, that show.
Yeah.
It was, like, 99 or 2000. Yeah, he would do that as well. And that drove me crazy.
Yeah. Let's say it's like all, like in American Horror Story, like you get into it knowing that the characters are going to die and then you kill them and then you bring them back to life. And it's just like, what's the...
Make up your mind.
Exactly. We're on board with it being a horror story. We're fine.
Yeah.
Like, either kill them or don't. And no one wants to watch television to really feel manipulated like that, to just be told you're an idiot for caring. That. Yeah, like, because no one likes to be told that you're an idiot for caring, I don't think.
Yeah, like, it always reminds me of back when I watched Bones.
Yeah.
Did you watch Bones?
I saw most of it, okay. But not...
Because do you remember how the end of season 4, I think it was, there was that weird fantasy episode?
Yes.
It was like a dream that wasn't really a dream.
Yeah.
I actually wrote an essay about this at uni, about like fan culture and stuff, because Hart Hansen, the creator, had said earlier that by the end of the season they'd be in bed together or whatever.
Yep.
And he said it wouldn't be a dream and it wouldn't be... I think he said it won't be a dream or it won't be I don't think he said fantasy, but he said in specific terms it's not going to be... So everyone's like, oh, it's going to be real. It's faux real.
Yeah.
And then it gets there and he's like, oh, no, it wasn't a dream. It was like a shared reality or something. And everyone's like, F you... Effing Hart Hansen.
It was a coma dream though, wasn't it?
Like a weird coma dream, but it was also like Brennan's story or something. Like it was the biggest excuse for the fact that he had like misled people and fans were so mad. So my whole essay is about how everyone was really, really mad at him. Because people feel betrayed by that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like you don't have to tease the fans like that.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, people just felt so angry about it and angry at being manipulated and what they perceive as being lied to by him, even if like by semantics. It wasn't a lie. It felt like a lie. It was an emotional lie.
Well, because it feels like a middle finger from the... Like, to me, it feels like a middle finger from the creator when it's just kind of like, there, I did it. Are you happy now? And it's just like, fuck you. We're emotionally invested in these characters as, like, people. We want them to have happy endings.
Yeah.
And, the best you can do is throw us a little bone. Just like, well, here's a dream they had and they kissed now, so that's all you wanted, right? And it's just like, no, the reason we want them to be paired up and coupled and happy. You don't want them to just like kiss.
That's the trouble is when like the showrunners play up to the fans too much. I think it causes trouble. I don't know if Psych ever does that. Just to get back into Psych a little bit. I don't know. I can't remember what happens, but no spoilies.
No spoilers. I don't think Psych ever does that. But I know Gilmore Girls did it. I'm pretty sure Suits just recently did, like, a sex
Gilmore
stream.
Girls, like, the start of season 3, a bit of fan service. And to be fair, as a fan, I loved that. I was like, I must have been about 14 or something, 14 or 15. And I was like, yes, that's the best thing ever. I love it.
Oh, my goodness.
Watched it a million times.
And The Flash just recently did it, like, the most recent episode did that.
Mm.
And it wasn't a dream. It was time travel. No spoilers, but...
I think a lot of shows do it. I mean, even X-Files did it.
Really?
Like, Mulder was in, like, a weird... it was actually a really good episode called Triangle.
Yeah.
They do it in 4 continuous shots. It's a really good episode. I love it. But he goes to the Bermuda Triangle to try and, like, find out about this ghost ship. And he goes back in time and stuff. So he's on the... It's actually filmed on the Queen Mary, but it's meant to be the Queen. They call it the Queen Anne. So he's in there in the 30s. Yeah. And there's like all the... It's like the Wizard of Oz. So all the X-Files people are there as different characters. Like the Smoking Man's like a German and stuff. And Scully is they're called like an SO agent. Like she's an American spy or whatever. And so they kiss in that weird alternate reality. But it's such a good episode with the continuous shots and everything.
Mm.
It's a really good one. So I recommend that to everyone. Season 6.
I think the one, I think the one that most antagonized fans was in Doctor Who with the Doctor and Rose.
Which one was Rose?
Billy Piper.
Oh, yeah.
The first time they kiss, she's actually being possessed. So she kisses him, but she's actually possessed.
She's like a sex demon.
Basically.
Oh, God.
Yeah, she kisses him, but she's possessed. And then the next time they kiss, it's his clone. And she, like, she pairs off with his clone because his clone is human. So, like, because Time Lords are immortal, like, at some point she'd die, but he wouldn't. But the clone is a human clone. So when they're paired off together, like, they live their life on the same timeline, which is really beautiful. But, like, she doesn't kiss the actual doctor. She kisses the clone and then goes off with him. And it's just like, and I think it was just like, you happy now they got together? And it's just
Though, to be fair, I do kind of like those moments sometimes if they're not trying to trick you into thinking it's real.
I mean, if
you know that it's a fantasy or you know that that it's not real the whole time, then it's fine.
That's it, I think it's just when it's like explicit, like when
they're like, ha, tricked you.
Yes.
That's when
you were ready for this, and
it's not going to happen for another 4 seasons. Yeah. Anyway, I feel like I've exhausted my notes for this episode. Yeah. Apart from I wrote like Buzz in his boxes !! And little boy cat saves the day !!
Yes. Oh, I just wrote down the end scene and in all caps. I wrote down best friends. How many best friends? Just one person.
Oh no, that was so cute.
Yeah, just one.
Bless you, Gus, and his Fruity Pebbles. Is that what they're called? No, Fruity.
Fruity.
They're meant to be like Fruit Loops. But yeah. It's called something else.
Exactly. I wonder if they're real in America, though, because it seemed like
maybe
they were doing product placement at the end. Fruity pot?
Fruit circles. Fruit I don't know.
Coloured circle things. Coloured,
multicoloured circles. Mm. And but that brought back the thing at the start. The flashback at the start with the cereal and the mood ring.
Yeah.
So it tied in the flashback.
Everything tied in nicely.
Yeah. Ratings time?
Yes, are you ready to rate? I think so. I'm ready to rate. How do I feel about this episode? I enjoyed it. I'll give it a 7 pineapples out of 10.
I enjoyed it as well. I liked the cat. I loved Dazzle and Stretch. That's one of my favourites. I guess it's not one that I've rewatched a lot. I think maybe because I didn't have it, actually, on my computer for a long time. So I sort of skipped it in a rewatch. But, I gave it 8 out of 10 pineapples.
Fantastic!
Yeah. Most of those points are for Dazzle and Stretch.
Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, that's good. Have you found the theme song this time?
No, I was just doing something else.
Oh, okay.
I did a post to a page for an organisation that I'm with and it's disappeared, so I'm wondering if
they deleted it. Why are you checking it in the middle of a podcast?
I know, because I knew it was timed.
I mean, Lavender.
I knew it was supposed to come up now. I said it to come post at 12, and so it would have posted, but it still disappeared, so now I'm just like, oh, did they delete it? So,
well, then let's wrap this up so you can deal with real things.
Exactly. So I can have my little nervous breakdown and... Because it's really personal. It's just really passionate that I write. It's just a very impassioned post and they've deleted it. So now I'm just like, great. Well, fabulous. Yeah. Boob.
Okay. Here we go. I hope you have the right one this time.
I'm sure I've got it.
Here we go. Oh,
nope.
I counted in too early.
You did.
In between the lines, there's a lot of obscurity. I'm not inclined to resign to maturity. If it's alright, then you're all wrong. Why bounce around to the same damn song? You'd rather run when you can crawl. I know, you know, that I'm not telling the truth. I know, you know, they just don't have any perception. Learn how to bend your worst inhibitions and we'll psych you out in the end.
Oh no, you know. Oh, I did the wrong version.
No!